Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. I'm Dr. Marty Gentius from Kent State University, and this week on Counselor Audio Source, Dr. Tom Hackett speaks with Drs. Lenore Gillum and Dr. Michael Baltimore, all of Columbus State University. Their topic is going to be about triadic supervision.
Today's discussion is the topic of triadic supervision. My name is Tom Hackett. I chair the Department of Counseling, Educational Leadership, and Professional Studies at Columbus State University. Joining me today for this discussion are Dr. Lenore Gillum, who is the coordinator of the school counseling program at Columbus State. She's a professor at Columbus State and has presented and published on numerous topics. One of them is triadic supervision. She's joined by Dr. Michael Baltimore, who chairs the community counseling program at Columbus State. He is a professor and has also published in this area. And I want to welcome you to our discussion today.
Thank you, Dr. Hackett.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I'd like to start off by asking you if you would give us an overview and maybe define for our listeners triadic supervision.
Triadic supervision came about for counselor educators as a result of the change in standards, KCREP standards in 2001. Those standards added triadic supervision, which is defined as one supervisor with two supervisees. At that particular point in time, we as a faculty were meeting as a peer supervision or supervisors group, and this was an area that became of interest to us. In fact, we had a fairly strong reaction to that standard and that change, questioned some of that, and began to look at the literature that was out there for this particular modality of supervision, wondered and brought about more questions related to this model, and then began to do our own research and writing and presentation in this area.
Up until recently, some of our work in this area had that we'd done some survey research on looking at people's perceptions of this modality. Mike and I had both actually received triadic supervision at various points along our training and had had good and bad experiences with it. And recently, anecdotally, we get feedback from students that have pros and cons associated with it. But I think just to go back to some of what Mike was saying, KCREP wants students in practicum and internship to receive both individual and group supervision. And with those 2001 standards, KCREP was saying that people needed to receive individual and or triadic supervision. So in many cases, we were wondering how triadic supervision was being employed. My concern about it was, is it being used for efficiency's sake only? As someone who's been very professionally interested in group work and supervision and training issues, I didn't think that efficiency's sake alone was the sole reason that people ought to be employing that modality, that they really needed to approach it thinking like a group worker, because some of the discussions that we had in earlier faculty meetings around this issue, we seemed to think that triadic supervision really looked more like group supervision than like individual supervision. And I guess just for the point of clarification, when we're talking today about triadic supervision, we are talking about the one supervisor, two supervisees, and when we're talking about individual, we're really talking more about that one-to-one relationship, one supervisor and one supervisee, just to not get confused with the terminology.
So your perspective is that you really would not implement this as a matter of convenience to a program, but rather to make the experience better for both supervisor and student.
I would say that's true. I don't think our purpose for being here isn't to tell people whether or not they should do it or exactly how they should do it. What I want to get across is that if people are going to employ triadic supervision, they think about their training and experience in supervision to make sure that they can continue giving supervisees the best oversight of their work, but they also consider group process and practice issues to hopefully help supervisees get more out of that experience. I think that depending on what supervisors' theoretical orientation is to supervision, people's orientation to group leadership, I think that those kinds of issues are going to have an impact on how people use triadic supervision. So I also don't have a prescribed set of recommendations for how people ought to use triadic supervision. Rather, get people to just think about what are some considerations that I need to keep in mind if I am going to employ triadic supervision.
So as a result of the KCREP standards starting in 2001, the supervisor, and you can look at it from the program standpoint as well, now have a choice of whether they will employ an individual supervision model, one-on-one, one supervisor, one supervisee, or the triadic model. Obviously, for those programs that have a large number of students, large faculty, there is a certain convenience connected with triadic supervision when you're seeing two supervisees at one time, just in terms of the time itself. So that's a choice that programs, I think, really need to look at, as well as the individual counselor educators who are providing clinical supervision for their students. We wanted to investigate a little bit more of this model and detail it out. And a matter of fact, at some point, this was back in 2005, I believe, Dr. Gillum and myself received a best practice grant from the Southern Association for Counselor Education and Supervision, which allowed us time to research what goes into the best practice of triadic supervision, looking at it from a program standpoint and administrative standpoint, as well as the supervisor responsibility and a supervisee's experience and perspective as well. So during our discussion today, I hope we can have a chance to just talk about all of those areas and give some of the things that we've learned about it and provide that to our listeners and maybe give them at least some information that they can begin to look at and make good decisions for themselves in their own programs and for the students.
Now, you mentioned, Dr. Baltimore, that there was a change in KCREP standards and that this precipitated maybe your review of triadic supervision as a possibility for your program and Dr. Gillum for yours. How did you initially, aside from the KCREP standard change, how did you initially become interested in this approach or model of supervision?
Back about in the late 1990s or around year 2000, we had a core of faculty very, very interested in clinical supervision issues. Some of our colleagues like David Hornbuckle, Lori Brown, Marty Gentius, Robin Lee, and I decided that we wanted to get peer supervision of our own peer supervision practices. And so as we were talking about what we were doing and reflecting on the 2001 standards draft, that was a time we were preparing for a review anyway. We were due up for KCREP reaccreditation. And so this issue of triadic supervision came up, and one of our colleagues was employing some triadic supervision already. And we just began to talk about what he was doing in that situation and what he perceived the benefits to be. And some of us were getting a little bit hung up on the fact that, well, that seems to be like group supervision. That kind of seems to be the benefit of group supervision, because I think at the time many of us assumed that, you know, we really think that one-to-one relationship in supervision is very important. We'll say a little bit more about that later. And so our concern was, will that be lost? And so maybe a possible response to that is, yeah, but in triadic supervision, they'll get perspective from other supervisees. So, you know, they'll get that feedback from someone other than just the supervisor. May help them feel like they're not alone in their process. There are a lot of benefits that come along with triadic supervision that we don't discount at all. But, you know, part of our argument back then was, well, we think that they're still going to get some of those same benefits out of group supervision. So how do we employ this individual piece? And I do want to note that I think that practicum and internship supervision can be, really, I think it's the most intense part of what I do as an educator. The standards for practicum alone require, on average, 1 hour per week of individual supervision, they include triadic in that too, either by the program faculty member or the program faculty member needs to be supervising somebody. With internship, they note that, KCRP standards note that oftentimes they're getting that individual on site. They're also requiring 1.5 hours of group supervision on average per week. So if you do the math, if you've got a section of 5 people in it, which is what KCRP is recommending, that 1-to-5 ratio, they recommend up to 1-to-10 in a group experience. But if you're a supervisor and you have 5 practicum students and you're supposed to provide 1 hour a week over the course of 15 weeks plus the group supervision, you do that math and it ends up being almost 100 hours of instructional time. It's like 75 for individual plus about 22.5 versus the 45 hours somebody would put into a 3-credit-hour class. And, you know, you don't just hang out during the week when you're not in supervision and not do anything. I mean, you're preparing, you're listening to tapes, you're keeping up with records, sometimes you're traveling to go observe them in sight. So this supervision piece is just really, really time intensive and really pretty energy intensive, I think. And I think it's hard for people outside of our profession to really understand that those are the kind of demands that we're up against in making sure that we provide more than adequate oversight to our students in the field.
I think another thing about our peer supervision group that really was a very interesting piece of it, that we would videotape and bring in our supervision sessions for critique from our fellow supervisors and counselor educators, which really gave us some insight into our own work. We looked at issues of orienting the student and preparing them for supervision, administrative issues of how to start and build a productive supervisory relationship. We looked at process issues, of course, setting goals, and then evaluation and assessment of the process. So I really recommend that to those programs who faculty have an interest in clinical supervision, because I'd like to see us do that again, but I really recommend that as a real important learning experience for those interested in clinical supervision. As we began to look at the differences between individual, group, and triadic, it seemed to be that there was some consensus in the group that the triadic model really pulled from the supervisor more group skill. And so the interaction seemed to be more about group. There was learning between the two supervisees, sharing of information that also takes place in the group. So we're just about convinced at that particular point in time that triadic supervision was really a version of group supervision. And at that point, we began to design some research studies and surveys to look at the differences in those things, and we'll talk about those as we go along. So I really think it's important that we underscore this notion that while it is a choice between individual and triadic from the KCRP standards, those programs that are KCRP accredited, that what we do in that is really take a look at what kind of consistent services in terms of supervision that we're providing for those students, and examine on an individual and program basis the kind of process issues, administrative issues that are going to be important, so that the student comes out with a positive learning experience, because this supervision oftentimes sets the stage for those students later in their career to become supervisors themselves. So we want to make sure that we're setting the groundwork for a very positive experience, and it gives us an opportunity to consider these factors in our work, as opposed to saying, okay, this is what we have to do, we've got a large number of students, and for convenience sake, we're going to put students together and that'll make our week go a little faster, as opposed to those kind of things, as Lenore mentioned, where it takes a great deal of time and energy and effort, a number of hours throughout the week to supervise our counselors in training. And that's what we should be doing from our point of view, at least from mine. I think I can speak for Lenore on that, because it's such an important process, if not the most important training experience while you're in a program.
And I just want to underscore, too, that my appreciation for having colleagues that are willing to explore these kind of issues. When I mentioned those folks a little bit earlier, they really had a large impact on my interest in this. And so I really want to give them credit for that piece. I certainly wouldn't speak for them. Mike and I have continued our work on this area for a number of years, even after they've been gone. But I feel like I can't just take credit away from them, because they really helped me stimulate my thinking about all of that work. So so Mike and I are speaking about our own opinions and professional ideas today, but we do really want to thank those folks for being our collaborators early on. I learned a lot from those experiences with them, and miss them a whole lot.
Absolutely.
So as you have implemented this approach over the last 3 or 4 years, has it changed the way you provide supervision to your students in actuality? And if so, how?
I think it definitely does. There are a number of ways I conceptualize my approach to this work. One being from an administrative standpoint, not only organizational/administrative issues that I take as a clinical supervisor, but also as program coordinator. I have administrative concerns that I consider every semester when I'm structuring who's going to go into what supervision groups. Because as I'm thinking about group composition and who I think might fit well in a particular place, you know, I have to think about triadic supervision too. I want to have a good balance in those groups, but I also have to think, okay, might there be some matches between with individuals in those groups that might be inappropriate.
So personalities come into play then as you set up these matches.
Well, from the administrative standpoint, first I'm setting up the groups for program faculty members and adjunct faculty members who are going to be providing supervision anyway. So, you know, if I'm aware that there may be some dynamic between a couple of people that shouldn't be in the same section, you know, I can go ahead and deal with that up front. But then there's also, like, in my individual section of five, I have to think, okay, how do I want to assign people to triads? Do I want them to pick their own? Is it something that we just end up doing based on scheduling? You know, I think in a perfect world, if they could be matched in some way for triadic supervision, that might be a good thing. But you know, I'm one who's had this experience, and there have been times where it just wouldn't work out schedule-wise. But because I considered who was going to be in the group in the first place, I felt okay about that. That's not necessarily the most desirable. The other issue is that if I'm in this 1-to-5 ratio, well, 5 isn't divisible by 2, so I can't really pair everybody up. I think that's the right answer. I was a math minor in college, but so then what do I do? Do I leave somebody out? Do I mix triads? So do I meet with supervisee 1 and 2 as a triad the first week and then mix them up? Because then you're talking about having different mini groups every time you employ triadic supervision. So that's another thing to think about. So there are some of those administrative, logistical kind of issues to think about. And from more of a clinical perspective, I am more purposeful in terms of demystifying with students what this triadic supervision process is going to look like, sharing with them my theoretical orientation to supervision, talking about how that looks in a group situation versus one-on-one versus in triadic supervision. The issue of informed consent is very important to me, so I want everybody to have the best understanding I can possibly get them, because I think as an ethical practitioner, that's something that I need to be doing. So those are just a few examples of how I think about supervision going into it.
I think for me, there was one issue at least that I was interested in prior to our looking at triadic supervision and how this affected some of the work that I've done with supervisees, and that is the idea of preparing students or counselors in training for supervision to make the best use of supervision, to be informed even prior to the initial meetings and discussion of supervision and the beginning of supervision. So that's been an area I've been interested in. in. My personal feeling is that we don't do enough in preparing people for this type of clinical work in terms of the supervision that they receive, best use of that time with a supervisor and what the expectations are. So I spent some time there, and it was really an opportunity for me to look back at that work, and also as we began to do some of the triadic supervision work, that I spent more time in that preparation, that orientation, that informed consent that Dr. Gillum had talked about, so that we have at the outset a platform or foundation for really working well within a triadic model, and that both students have a voice in the work that is going on. And again, that does relate to some of the group skills that I think counselor educators need to have in place in doing this type of work. I also thought that in terms of process, that there needed to be an understanding of how work was going to be presented and how feedback was being delivered. And so I really wanted to open this up to the individuals in triadic supervision to allow them to feel free to talk about issues. And we're going to hear from students in just a little bit. We have audio clips from students who have had both individual and triadic and hear their thoughts and perspectives on this, and we'll get to that in just a few moments. But I didn't want one student to feel like they had to be so concerned about another student that they weren't getting their needs met. So I think the problem and a real piece of awareness for me was how to balance that out as a supervisor with both supervisees, so that the one, they had a voice, but two, that they were getting and building a relationship with the supervisor as much as I could along the lines of the individual one-on-one supervision. And that I'm still working on. I think that's a balance and part of the process issue that we're going to continue to look at in terms of how do the supervisor prepare those students and then develop that relationship so that they do have the voice in this process. And then one of the other things that occurred to me was that I had to begin to be much more aware of how I gave critical feedback to supervisees. Both the summative and formative supervision feedback and evaluation process, it began to take a different form because of the triadic model. In other words, we'll talk some about the examples in a minute, but the idea that there may be a critical feedback that a particular counselor in training needs to receive, if you think of it from group process, then you become aware that the other supervisee becomes a partner in that process. And how and in what ways does that critical feedback take form? So I think that's something that we're going to continue to look at, and the evaluation process is something I've spent some time on in terms of looking at how it's different between the individual triadic and the group clinical supervision models.
Because I want to add something to that. If you look at stages of group development, for example, and you look at the life of a group over time, or you look at the life of a triad over time, and Mike's talking about some issues related to evaluation, or what if you just sense resistance from one of the two parties, or you know, when difficult issues to address even in one-on-one supervision come up in a triadic supervision session, if it's early in the life of that triad, dealing with those difficulties may seem like higher risk type of activities to the supervisees involved. Once people have a relationship and you've been able to move through time in an effective group development kind of way, people may be more open to hearing critical feedback, not just from you, but from the other supervisee. You might be able to have that exchange of much more honest feedback after the triad has had time to develop. And I think even if the two supervisees know each other prior to coming into that relationship, and even if they know me as the supervisor, one thing I say to them is, well, even though we all know each other, we've never been this triad before. You know, so talking about how this triad is taking on a new life. And so I just try to be conscientious that if there's a difficult issue that has to be addressed early in group supervision, it may be really uncomfortable for the person hearing it, but it could also be uncomfortable for the person who is considered the audience member in that standpoint. You know, if I'm giving direct feedback to you, Tom, and Mike is your partner in this triad, and you're listening to something that I'm saying, And let's just say that I've had a relationship with you for a long time, and I know that I can be extremely candid and that you're not going to crumble under feedback. Well, you even might be okay with hearing that feedback. But Mike, as someone who's listening to that, maybe I don't have the kind of relationship that I have with you, or you know, you're just different in some ways. That could really put Mike in a very uncomfortable position. He might think, oh no, I'm next. I'm going to get this kind of feedback. So anytime that I'm dealing directly with one supervisee, I have to be aware that there's constantly an audience in the room. And I hope a participative audience, because I think the other thing that I don't want to do as a supervisor is look like I'm having one-on-one supervision in front of another person. Oh, okay, and then it's the other person's turn. And then, you know, I want it to be more of an interactive kind of experience where we're all learning from each other, as opposed to just having one-on-one supervision in the same room together.
You know, one other issue that I'm aware of, and this may even supersede some of our focus on triadic supervision, but that is a style of or type of supervision where it's focused on case presentation. It seems to me that a number of clinical supervisors out there, and we talk about this in clinical supervisor training and some other publications, that a number of supervisors have gone through the ranks and been promoted in various mental health centers and other organizations without adequate training in clinical supervision, that the model of supervision becomes oriented to a particular counseling theory, for one, and two, very case presentation oriented, so that students in that particular model get used to presenting a case, getting feedback, the next person then presents a case, asks questions, or have the supervisor ask questions and gets the feedback. And that particular form of supervision is very popular and is used often. So I think one of the things that I know I've focused on in my supervision work that's come out of this is that idea that I want to be cautious that it doesn't become a straightforward process of I come in and talk about my case and the supervisor then gives me feedback and then we go to the next, as opposed to building the supervisory relationship where there's this very interactive active process of building a relationship and working on process issues that goes beyond just a simple case presentation type model. And so the second issue around that, I think, for me, is how to use time. In other words, how much time does a supervisor allot to a particular presentation of a case or professional issue in the work? So I think that is also, given the time frame, the amount of time you have for supervision, how best to use that time within that hour and a half, so that both of the counselors in training get their needs met and the supervisor feels like they're doing what they need to do. So time management is a big administrative function, I think, that we need to look at and continue to look at.
And my hope is if I'm doing it relatively well, the supervisees understand what's supposed to be happening in that supervision session. And so if one of them feels slighted for some particular reason, hopefully he or she will be able to talk about that, you know, because I might check in and say, okay, as a group, how are we doing here? Are we on task? And usually at the beginning of the triadic meeting, I have them do a brief check-in and then identify any issues they need to talk about in the triad that night, which is what I do in my group supervision as well. So I at least have an idea of what may be on the agenda. But if somebody comes in with a case that's particularly challenging, or it may be dealing with an ethical or legal issue, that person really might need more of the time in the triad that particular night. And the other person might be, oh yeah, fine, you know, not a problem. I've got some things, but it can wait till later. Or, you know, oftentimes the other supervisee is saying, well, I'm really glad that I can learn about this before I actually had to experience it. So I think that issue that Mike's talking about, even though I think the case conceptualization piece is really important, also making time for addressing sort of what's happening in the room, how are we doing as a triad, is this working towards individual and triadic goals, and you know, just also providing an opportunity for them to talk about issues that impact who they are as people as related to the work that they're doing. Because sometimes personal stuff will get in the way, and
Absolutely, and it seems to me that the supervisor, of course, we're interested in learning more about triadic supervision, but I would hope that, that clinical supervisors, counselor educators, are also beginning to be aware that this is a these are process issues that you must be aware of. For example, continuing along that same line, I remember students talking about, as I was asking them some questions about their experience in triadic supervision, that they were very interested in being courteous to the other supervisee, and they were very much these are helpers in training, if you will, and so these people were very much aware of wanting the other person to get their needs met, even at the expense of them their own in some cases. So they may forego or hold back some of the issues that they had had in mind prior to the meeting to talk about, but would not bring those up just because they wanted the other person to receive as much of the supervision as in the process as they could. Now, that's an interesting dilemma, and still, and it's a balance issue not only for the supervisor but also for the supervisees.
So what I'm hearing, several themes really, I'm hearing that the triadic approach develops a synergy because you have another person in the room that in there are some dynamics that come into play that don't come into play under different types of supervision, that it's more interactive and less related to case presentation, and that time is an issue. Now, given all that, what are issues that a beginning supervisor starting supervision must keep in mind as they plan for their process?
Well, I think we mentioned a few of those, and Dr. Gillum has mentioned several of those too, the idea of the administrative side of, and preparation for this area. But I hope our conversations, our research, and some of the writings that we have planned, and those issues, and many other people are interested in this too, in our presentations in SACES and some of the other organizations. We've gotten good feedback and a number of people showing up who are interested in the triadic supervision model, both the process and practice of that. And so I'm really excited about that part of it, as we all learn together some of the better ways of going about this approach, and that we're not taking anything for granted. In reality, there's not a lot of research on this particular topic in the field. We set it up through the standards and have that as an option, but the truth of the matter is we are still at a beginning stage of really understanding this process and practice of triadic supervision. So those administrative issues that we talked about in terms of setting up time and managing time and administrative matters, matching up of counselors in training and in groups, the orientation to that process, and then our management of it as we go along, I think those are things that people really need to be interested in if they're doing this work to get the best possible result.
What about key issues that students or supervisees should keep in mind as triadic supervision begins, and what might be issues that occur that affect those supervisees?
Well, I'll jump in on that one a little bit too. I mean, we have mentioned some of those issues, and I don't want to continue to repeat some of these things for our listeners there, but it's really important that the supervisees have an understanding of the clinical supervision process, and that have learned and experienced that the building a good supervisory relationship is a key in getting training feedback from within their programs and their supervisors. And so that at the outset, I think that is one of the things that students should be looking for, and that faculty should provide some of that as they come up. As a result of some of those questions, Lenore and I have, at our last presentation, put together a DVD with video clips from students who had just experienced during that supervision year, during their internship, practicum and internship, both individual, triadic, and group supervision. And at the end of that process, we're interviewed, and there were several questions that we asked those students. These were very good students, and I was proud to be associated with these students who were really dedicated to learning and to their work. And they gave us some very interesting answers to some of the questions. So if I could, I would like to just play the audio. This clip was talking about how a student prepares for the triadic clinical supervision.
I've run it through my mind. When I know I'm coming to supervision, I go to the schedule and I look and see is this individual, is this triadic, or is this group? Because it is going to determine how I prepare.
Right. That's more for individual.
Well, the questions that I can ask, the way with which I need to conceptualize this case,
right,
and the amount of time that I realistically am probably going to have to be able to get what I need.
So in this clip, there were a couple of the supervisees talking about how they are preparing for and knowing that they may not have the same amount of time where there's a one-on-one individual supervision session in a triadic model. So if they look at the schedule, see which one of those are coming up for them, then they prepare differently in terms of getting their questions out on the table faster and getting responses back, or beginning to delete or pull out some of the questions that maybe they didn't have time for. So they're making these adjustments along the way.
And in some cases, supervisees may be willing to take appropriate risks. They may be willing to take those in a one-on-one situation than compared with a group session. Although I suppose you could argue the other might be true. In some cases, knowing that they have a colleague slash buddy there with them, in some cases it might make them feel a little more comfortable sharing. I think that would really depend on the particular supervisee, but I think encouraging them to take appropriate risks either in one-on-one with you or in triadic supervision, and just encouraging them overall to be active participants in setting goals for not only what they want to get individually, but also, you know, what kind of goals might we come up with together for the time that the three of us are spending here, and then goals for group supervision. Encouraging them to really be active as opposed to passive. I'm not the kind of supervisor that just hands down learning to my students. You know, I'm very collaborative in that process, and so I want them to be active.
You know, one of the things we were talking about earlier in terms of just time management was that not only the supervisor has to be aware of that, but students have to be aware of that time management as well. So if they're preparing for it in a different way, I'd like to know a little bit more from the student perspective in terms of how they are preparing for that. There's a couple of responses during this interview process and videotaping that came from students had to do with, well, I really had to learn to speed up, and I didn't have the luxury of time to have long discussions with the supervisor in order to get to the result. In other words, I had to really be very efficient in the way I ask questions.
Is a really good thing.
And that turns out to be a nice thing to do, because it relates to a number of other issues in becoming a counselor. So it's a little bit more like cutting to the chase for them, and that was an adjustment throughout the year for these particular supervisees that we're hearing from.
We've talked a lot about the relationship between supervisor and supervisee, and really in this case, two supervisees. I think you have some additional audio that reflects some of the process issues involved. Before we hear that audio, could you maybe walk us through some of those process issues?
Some of this addresses what we've talked about before with thinking about the nature of my relationship with each student, and thinking about how I can give feedback or dealing with resistance or some other kind of defense that a supervisee may exhibit. Also an issue that I didn't really touch on earlier, I'm not sure if it necessarily goes here, but sometimes supervisees may be, even if they're in the same field experience, internship for example, they might have different developmental needs. You know, somebody might be at a place where he or she needs a lot more structure, and has a hard time working autonomously, versus somebody at the other end who's capable of working very well independently and doesn't really need as much of you from the teaching role. That person might be more of a collaborator with you, unless there's some really tricky issue that comes up. So I don't want to pitch an intervention that is over the head of one person. Does that make sense? And so I have to think about those things.
Right. Well, Dr. Baltimore, you have, I think, some audio that illustrates some of these issues. Could you give us maybe a lead-in to that audio and let us know what we're going to listen to?
Sure. This was a question that was was asked of the students. That and the question was, during your supervision this year, you've experienced both individual and triadic supervision. Describe the differences between them from your perspective.
I think Mike made a good point in that we're trying to maintain our reputation because we're taught to seek supervision when we need it. And as interns, we have cases that are complex to us, that are challenging to us. And if you are in a situation where you really want that supervision time for yourself, you can feel that need to hold back and maintain a front when we need to be very transparent during supervision in order to benefit and get the things that we need from it.
Well, and honestly, I think you brought up the point about us feeling a little insecure about us talking about things that have to do with us, with a colleague in the room. You know, quite frankly, there are times when I've had discussions with my supervisor about my supervisor that if there had been another person in the room, I wouldn't have talked about those things. I wouldn't have had that conversation. I wouldn't have shared those. Because sometimes a supervisor says, evaluate me. And if a supervisor says, evaluate me, and there's another student in the room, I'm going to be less likely to do so as honestly as I would do if it was just me and the supervisor.
Right.
And I have my reasons for that, but that's just the facts.
And it's the same thing. We talked about the supervisor would be less likely to be completely honest with us. Maybe they hold back, or maybe they sugarcoat it, just to make so they don't make people feel uncomfortable.
I really appreciate the honesty that these students presented in their responses to this. The idea that they are working to and making choices about what they talk about during those supervision sessions, and sometimes they're holding back. And so they want to talk about that, but for some reasons they're not being able to put that out on the into the discussion. And the fact that not only feedback for them, but also feedback for the supervisor, and that's part of any good clinical supervision process, is that the supervisor is receiving feedback about the process. So I really appreciate their honesty and just kind of putting that out on the table, and it shows a little bit more of what's going on from the supervisee's perspective with this triadic supervision model.
So maybe on the plus side with triadic supervision, possibly you have some inhibiting factors with the fact that there's someone else in the room. Now, with the models of supervision that counselor educators typically use, it would appear to me that they would be affected somewhat by using this approach, the triadic supervision approach, to working with students. Talk a little bit about how that's affected.
Lenore mentioned just a moment ago the developmental model. And first off, I think those of us in counselor education trained in supervision, we're aware that there are different models that are particular to clinical supervision. I'm not so sure that in a broad way that's knowledge for the typical clinical supervisor in the field at the mental health center, clinic, or school.
Or that, perhaps even some of our adjuncts.
Or maybe so. And that those models of supervision are really an important foundation for the delivery of clinical supervision. There's the developmental models, there's also the social role models, and of course what's used most often are those counseling theory or theory-oriented specific models that are based on the actual counseling theory. So a supervisor from a particular counseling theory may use that same model in terms of their supervision. Some of those issues, I think, of using a theory-oriented model have not been investigated within the framework of the triadic supervision. I think things begin to change and take shape in a different way using those models, and I also think that's probably true for the developmental models, such as the stage models, those models which allow verification and notation of the counselor development, where students start out at an early stage with questions about how to do things. They need more teaching and training, directive kind of approach. approach as they move on and to master these counseling skills, they'll move toward much more of a consultation type role and relationship with the supervisor. And so as you look at those different those stage models and the progression through that, I think it's very important to begin to apply that and template that over this triadic approach. I mean, if you go back and look at the social role models, well, that the Jeanine Bernard's model, which talks about the supervisor taking on the role of the teacher, of the counselor, and the consultant, and that moving between those roles in terms of supervision, you begin to get an idea of how you can apply those roles from that particular model to this triadic supervision. There may be a supervisee, for example, Lenore mentioned earlier, that who is not at the same level in clinical skill that another supervisee in triadic supervision may be. So therefore, that particular supervisee may need more teaching, so that the supervisor becomes more of a teacher in that moment, teaching a skill or help guiding directly that work for that particular supervisee. On the other hand, another supervisee in that same triadic model may be looking at higher order skills, some processings, dynamic skills, and so forth, that may require a more consultative role by the supervisor. I guess that's what I'm saying here really is that we really haven't spent enough time on looking at the various types of supervision theory models and how that impacts the triadic supervision work. And there's lots of work to be done there.
I think as another example of a place where it makes a lot of sense, if I'm working in an agency where I'm doing a lot of supervision of people, providing marriage and family therapy or couples counseling, and there's a co-therapist situation involved, I want to be in a triadic kind of situation with the two co-therapists because they have a shared client, so their work is directly linked. These people are directly linked to one another through their work, so that makes a lot of sense to employ triadic supervision in that instance. Or like the medical model of supervision where you sort of have there's a hierarchical type of relationship where the person providing the supervision is mentoring someone who's kind of mentoring the person, you know, in this tiered supervision kind of effect. So
I would also add too that you've mentioned theoretical orientation, but you know, in any good clinical supervision process, the supervisor is going to be presenting their theoretical orientation, their view of how therapy works, and their training and background as part of building the relationship at the outset. But there may be an opportunity in triadic supervision to have some level of conflict between both the theoretical orientation of the supervisor and those theoretical orientation from both or the two supervisees. We may have some room for debate. Now, that could be turned into a unique and profitable learning experience at the same way. So I don't want to frame that in necessarily in a negative way. But I think everybody needs to be informed at the outset of those different and sometimes competing theoretical orientations that may come about as they begin to discuss cases and look at particular process issues.
Lenore, you raised an issue a few minutes ago regarding adjuncts or part-time instructors using this approach. I know in other programs we have an issue arise when full-time faculty have developed a framework within which they work, whether it's supervising students or whether it's a certain type of training we promulgate in the classroom. How does this work with adjunct or part-time faculty?
Well, I think that this is an issue that, if I've learned anything throughout this process, is that there are many more questions that I have about this topic than answers. And it's been so stimulating to keep putting some of our work out there and collaborate with people. Mike talked about presenting this work at the SACES conference in September, and the neat thing for me was just all the sidebar conversations I had with folks, because it's so theoretical in a lot of ways, and I think that having people coming from different orientations there's going to be a piece of it that's going to remain theoretical and sort of like figuring out how to make recommendations about the way to do this. I think that's kind of where I'm getting stuck right now, but at this point in our work, feeling like, well, we at least have an idea of some things that we think people ought to consider and then integrate that into who they are and the work that they do. But I think that, you know, we take an active step in making sure that our adjunct folks are credentialed. So at least they're always licensed. And I think they've about all been through our supervision training too. Some of them have been through our EDS program and have had that supervision training. I think really the next step, and this is really reflective of where Mike and I are in this process, as a next step, I think that it would be helpful to meet with those part-time folks and really talk more about this issue with them.
So it's sort of an evolving process, even as we learn as full-time faculty how to train and bring on board people who are part-time with us in the supervision realm.
Absolutely, because if you think about where Mike and I said our interest started in this and talking about our colleagues who used to be here, these conversations that we've been part of these conversations probably for the last 8 years or so, you know, and I know I keep having more questions, so it's been an interesting process in terms of how it's evolved, and just continuing to talk with colleagues about it has been probably the most stimulating and educational piece for me.
As we continue to look at triadic supervision, I think our ultimate goal, while this is an interest and a research area for us, and we are excited about that idea, I think the ultimate goal really is a consistent, well thought out delivery of supervision for our students so that they get a consistent experience that supports them becoming a professional. That's what we're really after at the end of this process. We want to make sure that we're not going into this in some way where we ignore or overlook something that's going to be important in the process. So the ultimate goal, and we talked about best practice in triadic supervision, is really to provide some food for thought and some questions and maybe some of the techniques and some of the other kinds of practice issues that we can say really do help this process ultimately for the student.
How does assessment and evaluation differ using this approach versus using some of the other approaches to supervision?
I think we've addressed that piece in a number of ways, but we do have another audio clip that we wanted to play here to go along with this question.
I would just say before that that the idea of evaluation in clinical supervision is part of the overall orientation for students coming into supervision, and that needs to be a well thought out process as well. I mentioned earlier the notion that this supervision includes evaluation that is formative, which is occurring on a regular basis throughout the supervision meetings, and then also summative. In our program, we have both a midterm evaluation and a final evaluation, and the forms that we use are on the website, and students are introduced to those prior to supervision so that they know what those rating forms will be, and we'll have those both from site, university, and student. The other issue I think is important is that both the formative and summative supervision evaluation process and supervision has a due process element too, so that as students continue in supervision, they're not surprised at some point that they're not doing well. In some ways, they've been informed along the way, and these issues have been addressed, or the opportunity to address issues are provided throughout clinical supervision.
I'm assessing not only the way that students are developing over time, but also how I'm doing as a supervisor and how effective is the process. So, you know, I certainly want my own feedback and that I'm getting through self-reflection, through feedback from supervisees. Oftentimes they may not tell you what you really want to know until the term's over or at some later point, but I think just continuing to be a reflective supervisor, reflective group worker, the assessment is bigger than just assessing how supervisees are doing.
So making sure that the supervisee has a voice in giving feedback to the supervisor and not holding that back. We heard that in the earlier audio clip from students, that they were aware that sometimes they just had to hold back because they didn't think at the time that was appropriate for that particular moment. And I think in in evaluation two, that there has to be that opportunity for all of the parties to provide what's going on. And one of the things I've learned is that students, counselors in training, are very sensitive to the issue of feedback. So we want to take an opportunity. And here's an audio clip that will give us a little bit of feedback from these students.
In general, I would think that the supervisor's feedback would be very similar, except for maybe in the group or the triadic, he would draw more people in versus having his own opinions bringing out. And I think that if it was negative, I think that there's times when I feel like he might hold back versus being up front.
I think that more learning occurs in the individual supervision.
How so?
Because it's more of a one-on-one exchange of ideas. You have an opportunity to respond back immediately. The supervisor is not torn between asking the other partner what input they have. And the individual supervision sessions that I've had have created a lot of learning for me.
Okay.
Anytime you have more than one supervisee in the room, you force the supervisor to be now a group leader. Mm-hmm. And I've often felt like the building, the development of a relationship with my supervisor happened more concisely on a one-on-one basis.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get in more of a group setting, there's less of an opportunity to build a relationship with your supervisor.
I think that's an interesting comment from the last student who said that there's more of an opportunity to build that close professional relationship and supervisory relationship when there's one-on-one work.
We're getting toward the end of our session here today. What recommendations and suggestions can you make for those using the triadic supervision approach?
I would say be sure to remember administrative or organizational kind of issues in supervision as in addition to clinical supervision issues or process types of issues. I talked about training of part-time faculty. I think that would be an important area to consider. And ongoing collaboration, peer supervision with colleagues. I know that, I've kind of reiterated that probably enough at this point, but I just think that that's really critical.
I think the administrative issues are crucial at the outset, and the orienting the student, and in particular our work is focused on looking at both the student and the professor or counselor or educator in this process, but also process issues, those kind of issues that have come up in the normal course of clinical supervision. So those process issues, I think, are extremely important because there's so many things that come up in supervision, and we haven't talked about such things as goal setting and how that's affected. We talked a little bit about evaluation, all those other issues, so many to discuss, but time management, case presentation model, the evaluation, and so forth, and the group skills that are needed that are often overlooked as one starts this model. So just, I think there is really an opportunity here to look at a wide and peripheral view of how triadic supervision can best be conducted. And I'm really excited about the future of learning more and more about this. As Lenore said, we have lots of questions, and we're looking and searching for those answers as we go along and continue this research.
Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Michael Baltimore and Dr. Lenore Gillum. I want to thank our listeners for being with us on CounselorAudioSource.net. I'm Tom Hackett. Until next time.
You've just heard an interview of Drs. Lenore Gillum and Michael Baltimore, both of Columbus State University, regarding triadic supervision. Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at CounselorAudioSource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4242. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.